It's Tuesday, September 20th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the biggest series of the regular season is upon us. I don't think it's too much to say that, you know, this is the biggest three-game stretch that the Guardians have faced since day one of the season. And it could really go a long way in determining whether or not they're going to reach the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely, Joe. You know, they're four games up. They're playing the White Sox in a three-game series, a team that's in second place. And they can do severe damage to them with at least one win. And if they win, you know, if they win the series, you know, Chicago is in a really, really bad shape. I mean, Chicago basically has to sweep. And even if they sweep, they're still one game back, right?
Right. Let's reset this here. The Guardians are 80-67. Do you think back in April, if I had told you they would have 80 wins with 15 to play, that I was crazy? I mean, think about that. 80 wins right now for the Guardians, 15 games to play. The White Sox are in second place in the division. They are, what, four games back in the loss column. However, it's really like they're five games back in the loss column if they wind up with a tied record here. Like you said, they have to win one out of three in this series. Why is that important? Because a head-to-head tiebreaker would be 10 wins against this between the two teams. Take the season series, get to 10 wins. They're 9-6 right now.
9-7. 9-7
right now. Get to 10 wins against these guys, and it's pretty much in the bag in terms of all you have to do is play 500 ball the rest of the way out, and you would force the White Sox to go 11-1 in their final 12 games.
Yeah, they're in the driver's seat, Joe. They got to win a game. And 80 wins, they didn't win eight. You know, that's as many games as they won last year, all last year. And they didn't do that to the final game of the regular season. So they are ahead of schedule, and they are steaming toward the AL Central title.
Let's look at these matchups here. I want to ask you, last week, you know, we came out of that Thursday makeup game where the decision was made to start rookie Hunter Gaddis against these White Sox. Gaddis goes out, coughs up five home runs, ties a franchise record, and you know, everybody's feeling kind of, you know, kind of mopey about it, but it's pretty obvious right now that Tito had a plan or something in mind when it comes to this White Sox series and how important it was. You know, obviously you had the five-game series against Minnesota. I don't think anybody was expecting Cleveland to go win four out of five against Minnesota there. Even the Guardians, maybe three out of five, but they didn't want to start three rookies in that series, so they moved Gaddis into the makeup game, and they avoided having to pitch Tristan McKenzie twice against the White Sox. Now you've got a rotation set for this series of Aaron Civale, Tristan McKenzie, and then if you're 0-2 going into that last game of the series, you've got Bieber in your back pocket, and he gives you a chance anytime he goes out there.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Savali's kind of, you know, the weak link there. Tonight, we'll see how he does. He's coming off the injured list for the third time this season. He had some forearm, problems in his right forearm. So we'll see how he pitches. You know, he had one rehab start last Thursday. Did not go extremely well, but they must have, you know, they must have seen something that they like, because he's back in the rotation. And then McKenzie and Bieber, and you know, this is it's going to be really, really interesting. And Savali kind of draws the tough, the short straw in this one with Dylan Cease.
Right. Yeah. You put him up against their toughest pitcher. You probably can't expect a lot offensively once Dylan Cease gets rolling. But he is susceptible to, you know, maybe giving up an early couple of runs. We saw it against Baltimore a couple weeks ago. He had a real tough outing. But this is a guy who, when he's going right, he's one of the, you know, top three candidates for a Cy Young in the American League this year. So knowing that, you've got Aaron Civale. You'll probably see somebody like maybe a Kirk McCarty get in there and go a couple few innings if Savali goes short. But really, you're not expecting a lot offensively tonight if Cease is where he's, you know, supposed to be. That leaves Tristan McKenzie versus Lance Lynn, and that's another tough matchup for the Guardians. Do you think they will have learned anything from facing Lynn the last time they did on Thursday?
Well, this will be the fourth time they face him. You know, they beat him in the first game. He has pitched really, really well the last two times out. I think he's he got a no decision and he beat him on Thursday. He's a tough, he's a tough competitor. He has a history of pitching well against Cleveland. You know, that's a tough matchup. But, McKenzie's going to, I think this is might be his third time facing the White Sox. And the plus thing with that to me, Joe, is he's pitched well, and he hasn't given up a home run against them. So, I think if Tristan can keep pitching like that, when he doesn't give up a home run, he is really, really, he's a Cy Young caliber pitcher, especially this season. So, I think he's got that going for him.
Yeah, keeping the ball in the yard is definitely the big key for McKenzie. Offensively, we saw over the weekend some real breakout performances by the Guardians and their hitters, Amed Rosario first among them. We talked about his, back-to-back four-hit games in a doubleheader on Saturday. But then he goes out there yesterday and stole two bases, hit a three-run homer that basically his three-run homer in the sixth inning basically ended Minnesota's season. So, you got to give a lot of credit to the way that he's playing right now. And just over the last, in 40 career games against Minnesota, Amed slashing 358, 391, 594 with 12 doubles, 7 home runs, 29 RBIs. He really likes hitting against Minnesota. It would be really nice to see Amed Rosario's offense carry over against Chicago this week.
Yeah, definitely. He's on one of those roles right now. We've seen him, Joe, especially, it seems like, last year right after the All-Star break, he kind of got on a roll where he was hitting everything in sight, and he seems to be, has found that gear again, and is coming at the best time of the season, right down the stretch, and coming into Chicago, in a critical series where, the Cleveland, really needs this series, and they can really do damage to the White Sox, if they can win this series. I'm not talking about a sweep, but if they take two out of three, they could almost put it in cruise control after that.
Yeah, I mean, even just taking one game in this series, it's like winning two, because like we said, it makes Chicago not only have to play for the tie record-wise, but they would have to finish with a game better than the Guardians in the standings in order to, win the division title. A tie wouldn't do it. As far as, Rosario goes, Tito said something in the post game yesterday. He said he's ultra aggressive, and that aggressiveness, it pays off when he's hot. He's hitting everything, but being aggressive at the plate like that can also, lend itself to difficult stretches. So they sort of stack up as well. It's why you see him get hits in bunches. It's like if he gets two hits in a game, he's getting three. If he gets three hits in a game, there's a chance. Six times this year, he's gotten four. It's pretty impressive to watch, but also it comes with that caveat. If he's that aggressive, he can also miss that aggressively as well.
Yeah, he swings early and often, and sometimes that leads into, double plays, a lot of double plays, and sometimes it leads to a lot of hits, and the power has been impressive that he showed yesterday. And it's really kind of blows me away when you watch his home run in slow motion, how you pull your hands in and you still have the power to hit the ball out. Because you're taking like a half swing, it seems like, when on that. But he crushed that ball.
Yeah, Tito says that when he's hitting the ball to the right side of the field, that he's staying on balance and that he's balanced enough and quick enough to get to that pitch on the inside. The pitch that he hit for the home run was 3 to 4 inches off the plate inside, and he still got, you know, the barrel of the ball, of the bat to it, and got the ball out and lined it out. You could see the exit velocity was really good. So yeah, he's a professional hitter. He is a good hitter. It's just that sometimes you would like to see maybe a walk or two mixed in there. That would make him an elite hitter as opposed to, you know, just a really good hitter. We've got to mention Sam Hentges coming in relief in that ball game, pitched 2 1/3 scoreless innings, picked up his first career save, which, you know, it's noteworthy. I mean, this is a guy who, since the All-Star break, has been one of the best relief pitchers in all of baseball. I mean, you talk about Emmanuel Clase, you talk about James Karinczak and what they've done this year, but since the All-Star break, 0.36 ERA in 25 innings for Sam Hentges, and his WHIP is 0.44. That's amazing. And 30 strikeouts while issuing only 3 walks in that span.
Yeah, Joe, you did a nice story on him. And what do you think the key is for him, you know, finding this groove that he's in?
Well, it was definitely him leaning on that sinker, the two-seam grip, and throwing it to left-handers as an out pitch. They don't like the ball that moves in on their belt buckle, and that's what he throws it. He'd been throwing it to right-handers, and now Luke Maley and Austin Hedges convinced him, hey, let's throw it to the lefties a little more. And once he started doing that, he started getting a ton of swing and miss. And, you know, he's just been dominant from the left side out there. He gives them that different look when he goes out and takes the mound.
Yeah, and, you know, he's the left-hander. You know, he gives you a different look. And he's not, you know, one of those soft-throwing lefties. You know, the guy's 6'5", 6'6", about 240.
He's 6'7".
And he's bringing it. You know, he's not one of those little left-handers that kind of trick you. He's coming right at you, and he kind of, you know, it's a power game, and he is really he's been fun to watch.
Yeah, if you want to feel like a small human, walk into the Guardians clubhouse anytime lately. Even the new kid, the rookie that they had brought up just for this past weekend, Carlos Vargas, he stands 6'4". You've got Oscar Gonzalez, Emmanuel Clase, Sam Hentges. There are quite a few very tall individuals in that clubhouse, and particularly on the pitching side of things. Now you've got your Stephen Kwans and your Miles Straws as well, so I guess it balances out the curve. But yeah, they would be able to put up a pretty decent front line in terms of a basketball team if they wanted to.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned Miles Straw. He's, you know, he's finally come out of that long, long funk, Joe. And he's driving the ball. He's hitting the ball, pulling the ball, hitting it off the wall. And, you know, that can only help Cleveland at this point of the season.
Tito mentioned, you don't see it too often. A guy hitting a triple on a ball to left field. And he's seen Ahmed Rosario do it a couple of times. And we saw Miles Straw do it yesterday. Hit a ball to left field and wound up on third base, and that's impressive when you're running the bases like that. But you're right. 13 of his last 15 games, he's gotten a hit, slashing .389, .431, .481 over that stretch. Since September 5th, he ranks among American League leaders in batting average, total hits, and really he's putting the ball in play. He told us the other day that he's pulling the ball a little more. He's looking to pull the ball a little more, and that's really what's paid off in this big change for him.
Yeah, I know they asked him, I think they wanted him to be a little more aggressive, and he seems to be more aggressive at the plate, Joe. He's picking out some pitches to, you know, just kind of sell out on. He still has a tendency not to strike out, to that fear of striking out, to put the ball in play, no matter, you know, if it's soft contact or not. And but you know, he's hit some line drives here, and you know, and that's encouraging. I mean, he's driven the ball too.
Well, when you run the way that he does, you know, putting the ball in play gives you better results than you know taking pitches. So I get that, I understand that, but you're right. He's always been known for controlling the strike zone, and being able to do that. So let's talk a little bit about what the Guardians need to do. What are the keys to winning in this series against the White Sox this weekend or this week? As they open up three games at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Well, they've got to pitch well. Obviously, those three starters have to really, you know, Savali, McKenzie, and Bieber have to, you know, keep them in the game and let them, you know, hopefully let that offense, you know, score first. If they do score first, which they've, you know, they've shown a tendency to do lately, and then make that lead hold up. I think they've got to, you know, hopefully get Emmanuel Class A into the game. He's pitched very, very well against the White Sox this year. Hasn't given up a run in seven innings. And I think they got to score first, Joe. I mean, that's simple math, but they are what, 61-21 when they score first. You know, we saw that against, you know, in these last eight games against the Twins. And, you know, that's kind of the formula for them.
Yeah, Josh Naylor, another key, as you pointed out in your post from late last night. Naylor hitting .352 with three home runs and 16 RBI against the White Sox this year. Very important to have him healthy and upright and finishing the series, because you want to see him in those late game situations. It was funny the other night when the Guardians had won. I believe it was Friday night. And they were scoreboard watching in the clubhouse, watching Detroit and the White Sox play. And I believe Detroit won a game with a walk-off against Liam Hendricks in the 11th inning, a sacrifice fly, and the Tigers won the game. And as Liam Hendricks gave up that sacrifice fly, I believe it was to Victor Reyes. The one voice you heard screaming above everybody else's was Josh Naylor. It was an expletive, so I'll fill it in, but it was something to the effect of "screw you, Liam Hendricks," as Naylor sort of turned and shouted, and the clubhouse celebrated that walk-off. I thought that was a pretty funny moment. It just sort of connected back to that May game, May 9th, where Naylor just sort of beat the pants off the White Sox all by himself.
Yeah, we've got to see, you know, the incredible bulk. They got to unleash him again in this series. I mean, he's got 16 RBIs against the White Sox this year. He's hitting like .362, some crazy number like that. Three home runs. And I think, you know, what he drove in eight runs in that game on May 9th when they rallied, you know, and beat them in, I think, 11 innings. So, you know, that was the first time we've seen Naylor unchained. So I'm sure Indians or Cleveland fans are, you know, would love to see a repeat performance.
Well, wear your batting helmet down into the clubhouse when you're around him, Hoynesy. You don't want to take any friendly fire for certain. But should be an interesting week. The magic number as it stands right now is at 12. If they win any game during this series, that number will drop by 3. Any subsequent games that they win in this series, the number would drop by 2. And then you go, you know, continue the road trip in Texas. And who knows, by the time you get back to Cleveland to take on the Rays next week, we might be talking about some sort of clinching scenario.
Yeah, they're getting close, Joe. It's, you know, we've seen what Houston clinched last night. We've seen the Dodgers clinch earlier, you know, last week or earlier this week. So it's clinching time. And pardon me?
The Mets also clinched.
Yeah, the Mets too. And so, yeah, so it's clinching time, and the Guardians are getting close to it.
All right. It's in the air, Hoynesy. We'll check in with you again from Chicago tomorrow here on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.
All right, Joe.